Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I scared Casey.
You did. Every now and then, when we do this, you know, sometimes if you're feeling chill, you're just like, hey, Fungal Associates, yeah. What's going on? Welcome to Fresh Air with Alex Croson. And then other times, we like do something and we have to like redo it, and you come back in like you're a surfer riding a giant wave straight to shore.
Yeah, I Kool-Aid man my way into the podcast.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. That was so good.
Well, here we are. This is the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm Alex Croson.
I am Casey Clapp.
Hi, Casey.
Hello, Alex.
Go ahead and take a drink of your water.
I'll take a drink of my water. We might need to pause, actually, because I think I may need to, in fact, now figure out my laptop. For those of you paying attention home, my laptop today decided it doesn't want to stay plugged in, though it's plugged in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a bit of a power issue.
It is. Yeah. It's got some power issues for sure.
I would call it a power struggle.
I think it is. Yeah. I think that's the best possible description.
You're certainly struggling with it.
Yeah. So we're going to switch to a different thing real fast. And I'm also going to take a drink of water.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Although to you, it will just seem like an edit, and we're going to start that now. Okay. So we're back.
Nothing has changed.
We tried to get the iPad going, but it's acting funny.
Yeah, we're just going to do this one live, and we're going to keep it all in the noggin.
Wow, right, Bill O'Reilly style.
That's right. Yeah, I think we actually brought up Bill O'Reilly last week, too. So
I think we did.
We're having a Bill O'Reilly kind of couple weeks here.
I don't like that.
I'm sorry.
We should stop mentioning Bill O'Reilly.
We'll change.
I think it was me twice.
My God, that's true. Yeah, what are you up to? What's in your mind right now?
That one video of him saying, fuck it, we'll do it live.
Which, honestly, such a good video.
It's pretty classic.
Like, it is such a classic video of just a freak out.
Just a monster losing it on his underlings.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, okay, dude.
Yeah.
Hi. Welcome. I'm pissed. Okay.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Playing us out. What is Sting. That? What is that? So funny. All right. Geez. Enough with Bill O'Reilly. We'll talk about him next year.
Yes,
Casey.
Exactly. Alex, good morning to you.
Good morning to you. I'm sorry been a bit of a stressful morning.
That's okay. Life
happens.
There's
a lot of shit going on.
It is.
Something exciting. I have a show tonight.
That's right. Unfortunately, if you're listening to this, though, you've missed it by a week.
I had a show last week.
Yeah, it is very exciting. We're all going to go out and watch you tonight.
Yeah.
It's going to be very good. So it's also at one of my favorite pubs here in Portland, Alberta Street Pub.
The Alberta Street Pub.
I do have a qualm with it, though.
Uh-oh.
Historically, they had really, really good, like, chicken strips, like chicken tenders.
Okay.
I have just a soft spot in my heart for good chicken tenders.
You're a bit of a connoisseur.
I really like them. In fact, you recommended that I go to Dave's Hot Chicken.
Yes.
They did last weekend.
You did?
It was pretty good.
I'm glad you liked it.
So there, sans the spice of the Dave's Hot Chicken.
Yeah.
If you had that same kind of like really juicy, well-cut, well-breaded, clearly a natural piece of meat, not like, you know, the things that you get that are like freeze-dried that you're like, oh my God, that's not the shape of
compound
what,
chicken.
Yeah, exactly. Which I find just horrifying.
Yeah.
Historically, Alberta Street Pub had that delicious kind of chicken. Like, it blew me away when I got it. I was like, oh my God, this is way better than I'd expect.
Yeah.
And it like moved them up notches because they have good beer that I like. They had great chicken strips for a reasonable price. All good.
I see where this is going.
I went back a while back and I got those chicken strips and they were the freeze dried. Like, just open the bag, dump it out. There you go. And I'm like, oh my God.
That's too bad.
It's too bad. So I'm going to let them know because I feel like I have to just to say, it's not that I'm going to stop coming here, but you change your chicken strips and it's unacceptable. I'm sorry. Like, even if you lower the price, which I don't think they did.
Yeah. Oh, that's not good.
Exactly.
My biggest food casualty of 2020was ranch pizza here in Portland.
Oh, yeah.
It was the best pizza I'd ever had. It and Dino's kind of tied for first. They're different styles. Ranch is Detroit style.
Uh-huh.
And then at some point in 2020, something changed.
Really?
Like, overnight.
In 2020?
Yeah.
Not 2021?
No.
Not 2022?
No, not 2019.
Okay, so this is a food casualty from like...
The pandemic,
two years ago. Okay, yeah.
And I'm still thinking about it.
You are. I remember, actually, Ranch Pizza, I introduced you to that because I was like, there's this new delicious pizza. And you're like, what?
Oh, wow. I was like, I don't remember
Ranch.
This.
Yeah, I think I brought one over and you were like... Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got it all the time. But it's like, you know, I'm not trying to take ownership. It's like someone introduces you to something, you're like, holy shit. But I remember distinctly because you were a big fan of pizza.
Yes.
And I lived right next to it. So I was like, I got this place. I think you might like.
Yeah, you know, they've really something in their recipe. Something the way they cook the pies changed. It's just not what it used to be. And it's really upsetting.
Yeah, I think what happened. So, you know, they started as a food cart, right?
I did not know that.
They started as a food cart.
And now they're like a chain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think that they probably, it's the same thing with like Stumptown Coffee. When it first started, it was small, artisanal. Now they're like a national brand.
Yeah.
So the quality just can't keep up with the industrialization of it.
That's the reason that In-N-Out refuses to expand.
Yeah, which is fine, but also good.
Well, do you not like In-N-Out?
I don't like In-N-Out.
Their burgers?
Don't like their burgers.
Okay. Fair
you know enough. What? You know how some people, in fact, I had the same thing with, Dick's up in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, it's just a fast food shitty burger.
I don't know about that, Casey.
It's the same kind of burger you get everywhere else. Maybe the meat is a higher quality, but it's still a patty that is like thin and tiny. It's the white bread with our secret sauce. Our secret sauce is the same like mayo ketchup thing in every place.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's not your secret sauce.
Well, theirs has other stuff in it.
All right, that's
but
fair.
It's about execution, Casey.
So, okay, so yeah, convince me here. What is it that you like about it?
I'm not like an In-N-Out guy. I'm not like one of these people who's obsessed with In-N-Out.
Yeah.
Like, I have to get it first thing when I land in L.A.
Yeah, right.
Or I don't live where it's around a lot. But I think it is definitely in the top echelon of like fast casual burger places.
Okay.
Are you putting it on the same platform as like McDonald's?
I mean, it's I would say it's above McDonald's.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Not far. Like, I don't like those casual fast burgers. Like, I want a burger that had some time and thought that went into it.
Okay.
Like, I want to imagine the guy in the back being like, okay, yeah, burger.
Casey's smashing the patty in his hands.
Yeah.
Do you like a smash burger or do you like a thick, juicy patty?
I like a thick, juicy one.
Okay, grilled or pan fried?
Both, either one I think works. But
okay.
I honestly couldn't sit here and tell you that I've had knowingly the difference other than when I've made it myself.
Brioche bun?
Yeah, probably way more.
White bun?
No.
You like a brioche?
I do not like the white buns.
Okay,
no,
like a sesame bun?
Awful. Not really, because it's just sesame on top of white bun.
Okay. Do you like veggies on your burger?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah.
Like what veggies? Tomatoes?
Fried onions and garlic and mushrooms.
Okay, that's pretty indie, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say that's
burger
fair.
Veggies.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's okay.
But not tomato and lettuce?
Yeah, I would put some lettuce. You can probably leave the tomato off because the tomato that you're going to put on is one of those like Roma tomatoes that ripen on the vine that taste horrible and have no flavor to them.
The out of season tomatoes that don't need it. That are like translucent pink.
Yes, if you bring if you go out to your garden, you get a big beefsteak and you cut that and then you put a slice of that on my burger. Yes.
Yeah, man.
In one big piece of lettuce. I don't want all that like giant stuff all the time. You put an egg on top of it. Also good.
You don't like shredded lettuce?
It's fine. But again, it's one of those things where I know the shredded lettuce is completely flavorless. Just, you know, leaf.
Okay.
But I've had, you know, Hannah, my partner, has had a huge amount of delicious vegetables that she's grown because she is a vegetable grower.
Yeah.
So as a farmer, I got rather, because she's a farmer, I got like such top-notch quality produce.
Sure, you got a little spoiled.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's like, oh, you know what? If it's not good quality and it's like a big piece of it, just keep it off.
Sure.
Give me the stuff that's good.
See, I'm not a vegetable, I'm a burger kind of person.
Really?
I like a burger that is basically just, and you know me, I like everything across the spectrum of quality. Like,
yeah, okay,
I love
yeah.
McDonald's. I love like fair. A homemade,
you have like, a
fresh ground burger.
Yeah, I think you put it in the right category where I have like category burger. And then I look down, I'm like, well, what's good? What's bad?
Right.
And you have category good burger, bad burger, homemade burger, this kind of burger.
And for me, there's room for all of those.
Exactly. And each one of those categories has a good and a bad spectrum within it.
Yes. Thank you, Casey.
Yeah.
I feel so seen.
I do. I got you on that.
But I love just like a good bun, good beef, and cheese, maybe, yeah. And then like mayo.
Mm.
That's my perfect burger.
Hey, all right. That's fair. I'm trying to think of what the
And then give me like two of those.
Okay, yeah, give me two of those, and I'm going to sit here for a while.
And the American cheese hate is really absurd.
Honestly.
It's perfect for what it's good at. People act like it's not an aged camembert. I'm not going to eat American cheese. Well, yeah, it doesn't need to hold the same space as even like a good cheddar.
See, I think this is an important distinction that we've learned about ourselves. This like breaking down of many spectrums versus one big spectrum.
Yeah.
You and I respectively, because I am on that hate like hard. In fact, if I'm looking at a burger and I'm like, I'm really in the mood for a burger. And I look at it and all their burgers have American cheese. I'm not getting a burger.
Casey, I want to say right now.
Please.
In 2023, we can bring it down a little bit if we want. Set the timeline. I will make you a burger with American cheese.
Jeez.
And you don't have to eat the whole thing, but I only request one bite, Casey.
That's fair. Okay,
and
I'll do it.
I bet you that you will like it.
I'm sure I will. Like, I know that. But I also, like, it's that I dislike peeling like plastic off the top of my mouth with my tongue. That's what it feels like when I eat American cheese.
I hate
cheese.
When people call American cheese plastic.
Well, that's
so reductive. It's not plastic.
It is. Oh,
it
my
is
God.
Not plastic.
It's essentially plastic.
It's like whey protein pressed into a cheese matter. It's oh, not geez. Plastic.
You're
it's
not,
made of milk.
I don't think that's helping me out.
It's made of milk. All right, Casey, geez. We're here to talk about a tree. Should we edit any of that out? You
absolutely
think?
Not. Absolutely not. This is the way this podcast is. This is what the people are asking
for. Oh Lord. If you're new, we don't do that often, but I would really love to leave all that in
because
I feel very passionate about
away.
It all. We all do. Right.
Well,
we do.
Yeah, I have my passionate times. You have your passionate times. Last week was a big passionate time for me.
Oh yeah. And did I edit some of that out? Sure.
Most likely.
No, actually, in the Q&A section, I think I just let it run. I didn't know where to cut.
Hey, that's good. Sorry, everyone.
You went into a fugue state and just started spewing all this
Casey's
stuff.
Casey's floating. I don't know what's going on.
Well, Casey, we're here to talk about a tree.
Yes, this week we are talking about a tree.
And that tree is the interestingly named Brewer spruce.
Yes, Alex. It is named after one Professor W.H. Brewer.
Wow.
Who lived between 1828 and 1910.
Okay.
And this person, he was in connection with the California State Geological Society and worked as a part of their survey crew.
We're talking There Will Be Blood era. That sounds like a
yes.
character. That guy's name sounds like a character in the
Oh
Will Be
yeah,
Blood.
Professor W.H. Brewer.
Yeah.
I'm here to find your trees.
That's pretty good.
Thank you. I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's a wonderful film. Yes, okay, so we're talking about the Brewer spruce today.
Yep. I should say a lot of people also call it the weeping spruce.
Weeping
so,
spruce.
Yeah. I oftentimes like to refer to trees more in that way than a person really. person-related thing okay. all the time, just because a person-related thing gives you nothing. It's like the scientific name, Picea breweriana.
Right.
All you know is that, oh, it's the brewer spruce. Easy to remember the name, but you get nothing from it. It's not a descriptor at all.
Sort of an ego-based naming system.
Yeah, and I don't like... A part of me does appreciate it, like the naming system, that convention of naming after somebody is kind of like a respect thing.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. Douglas fir.
Yeah, Douglas fir, exactly. But at the same time, it's nice to have something that like describes it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because like I'm not gonna be like, oh, that tree looks just like Professor W.H. Brewer. That's right. Every now and then, if like someone finds this wild thing and they say, actually, this is a different species, then you can like, I don't know. I feel like there's room for it. It has a place.
Mm-hmm.
It's the American cheese of naming.
Wow.
But there are better names out there. There are crumblier names. There are names that are aged.
Oh, Lord.
Well, I'm Casey, so tickled that I just did that.
We had the great opportunity and kind of, I don't know if we want to say this, sprinkled throughout this episode.
Yeah.
An interview with Michael Kaufman. Casey, why don't you tell us who Michael Kaufman is and kind of why we spoke to him?
Excellent, excellent question. So Michael Kaufman is a professor, an educator, an author who lives down in Humboldt, California.
Mm-hmm.
And which is now, I think he teaches or at least works with Cal Poly Humboldt. And Michael came from Virginia, moved to Southern California, and would just go climb mountains in the desert and found all these cool conifers. And he ended up moving up to Northern California and was like, oh my God, there are like conifers on every other mountaintop, like yeah. different species. So he ended up putting together essentially a bunch of walks. And those walks would go... find different conifers along different trails in different parts of the of Northern California, Southern Oregon. And he did that. And then apparently some professors were like, you should just make this into your master's degree. And basically said, you, sir, need to come do a master's with us. He then went over and got involved doing this his master's work, which then ended up being him putting out these two books, Conifer Country and Conifers of the Pacific Slope. Two books that I love very much because they are all about hiking to go find really intensely amazing conifers.
Yeah, we should say that Casey Clapp is a fan of Michael Kaufman. It was really cool. You know, this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. I had never heard of Michael Kaufman. I'm glad to have met him. Very nice guy.
Yeah.
You were like, I was excited for you to talk to him because you're a big fan of his writing.
It's a huge fan. And Michael reached out to us. And first thing, he was like, big fan of the show. And then
cool.
He was like, hey, you might be interested. I wrote this new book. And his new book that he wrote is The Klamath Mountains, A Natural History. And I was like, we would love to talk to you about this. Oh, my God. So you and I, we set up about an hour and a half where we just sat down and talked to him about his new book, about what is unique about these mountains. And specifically, we talked a little bit about our tree today, the Brewer Spruce or Spruce.
Oh, Brewer's Spruce.
Yeah, I think it is the Spruce of Brewer.
Like Fred Meyer's. Fred Meyer's store is the unwritten word there.
No, but it's actually just Fred Meyer.
Oh my God, you're right.
There's no S.
Albertsons.
Yes, exactly. So this is Brewer's Spruce, as in the Spruce of Brewer.
Got it.
If we were saying this in Spanish or French or something.
Yes, yes.
So we ended up sitting down and got to hear a thousand interesting things about the Klamath Mountains and the tree itself. And so we ended up, we're going to pepper in some of these things because he's such a brilliant person and has gone and done so much in this area that you just have to be like, well, you're the expert. I don't even have enough room in my brain to have as much as you have right now about this one space in this world. And it was such a delight to talk to him.
That's right, Case. And we get to hear a few selections from that interview. We're like DJs. Like, this is our playlist.
All right, everyone. We're going to get a little Michael Kaufman here a little later. Everyone just grab your best nighttime drink and just sit down and relax.
Here's Michael Kaufman with Conifer Country. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Down. Casey.
Hi, Alex.
You know something about me?
I do.
And you do know this, that I love to be cozy.
Yes, that is very true. Unfortunately, I have to get you out of your bed to do work. You know, because our studio here is small.
Yeah, Casey physically drags me out of bed every morning. And you know what?
Slap a pair of headphones on.
And you know what I'm sleeping on, Casey?
What are you sleeping on today, Alex?
My brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
Oh, Alex, I heard about this.
And you know what I'm sleeping in?
What?
My brand new Cozy Earth jogger set.
Ooh, hold on. Let me get a feel of that. Not your sheet. I'm getting my own sheet.
That's right.
Ooh, this is smooth.
Casey is wrapped in his new Cozy Earth bedding. Now, Casey just returned from Italy.
Just got back.
Land of soft fabrics.
Exactly.
And he has waiting for him products from our brand new sponsor, Cozy Earth. Casey, what do you think?
This is incredible. I don't think I've ever felt something so soft and so, like, I don't know. It feels silky and smooth and it looks beautiful.
It's true, Casey. And you know what? I have been sleeping in my Cozy Earth clothing.
Well, Alex, have you noticed anything about your sleep?
I have been sleeping so well. And here are some things I love about sleeping in my Cozy Earth bedding and my Cozy Earth clothes.
Yeah.
This is no longer officially an ad. This is just me talking.
Hey, everyone just come on in. Just come on in here.
Casey, it is temperature regulating, so I no longer have any problems with getting too warm, getting too cool, having to get up and shut the window, having to get up and open the window, turn the heat on, turn the heat off. I sleep through the night. Soon I'll be eating solid foods. And I have such a good time doing it. Casey, I know you've been traveling, you've been flying, you've been not sleeping in your own bed. I cannot tell you how excited I am for you to try this brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
I cannot tell you how much I agree. Just feeling it, I'm essentially swaddled in a sheet right now, Alex.
That's right,
and
you are.
I cannot tell you how excited. I'm going to wash this. I'm going to throw it on my bed today.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to be as cozy as Alex and I, then go to CozyEarth.com and after you purchase, enter the promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, to get 35% off. That's huge.
And Casey, how about this? All of Cozy Earth's products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. I don't have that kind of warranty on my tires.
I don't have that kind of warranty on anything.
So go to CozyEarth.com and use promo code TREES for 35% off. Now go and get cozy.
Yeah, you go get cozy now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates. Sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted. Even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring.
Yes, it is.
Oh, welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the Brewer Spruce or Brewer's Spruce.
I thought you said Brewer.
Brewer Spruce. Yeah, it's kind of a hard word to say.
Yeah, I realized at the end of that, I never actually even said what the opposite name or the alternate name would be, but the Weeping Spruce. Did I say that?
Yes, you did say that. Okay, what is the Latin of this one?
This is Picea breweriana.
Breweriana.
Yeah, pretty awful.
You guys, come on.
Yeah, you got to be like, yeah, which sucks. Like, it's like.
That's a bad name.
It's a bad name. It's a really hard name to say. And I'm sure there's been other taxonomists who I've read, and they are upset with how atrocious some names are.
Yeah.
So much to the point where they just say, that's the worst possible name. We're not going to support it. Pick a different name.
Yeah.
No matter the convention of like priority and things like that.
I think we should rally the troops and get this done with the Brewer's Spruce.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
Honestly. So there is, I don't know if there's a Picea Pendula, but this would be the weeping spruce. Picea Pendula.
Nothing will ever be Metasequoia glyptosporoides.
No, God, no. Not at all. But also, that's such a good name.
Yeah.
Like, it's classic. All the vowels and the sounds line up.
Yeah.
It flows off the tongue really well.
Yeah, it's like
even though it's
physically
really
a good name.
Exactly.
Well, Casey, let's imagine that you and I are walking through the Klamath Mountains. We're taking a little hike with Michael Kaufman. Let's imagine that, huh?
That sounds so nice.
And we come across some weeping spruce. Let's ID this tree.
Let's get into it, Alex. So the first thing that, of course, is very obvious that you're going to notice, it is weeping.
Wow.
All of the branches of the tree like hang straight down. So, of course, it's a tree, so it has certain branches that grow up and grow outright. But the thing is that it kind of looks like it's all drooping off. So, like, the main branch coming out will grow at a normal angle, but then all the twigs that come off of it are just draping down.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's like someone holding their arms out with like scarves on it saying, hey, you want to buy these beautiful scarves? And that's kind of what it looks like, but maybe less scarves, maybe like many different kind of necklaces that are of different lengths and things.
Yes, that's the perfect descriptor, Casey. It also looks like it kind of took a hard hit in a storm or something.
Yeah,
it's kind
definitely
of a mess.
Yeah, that's a perfect descriptor. And so it has these beautiful little needles, and the needles, because of course the twigs are aimed straight down, so the needles shoot out at a perpendicular angle from those twigs as they're hanging down. So it kind of has this almost bottle brush appearance. And the tree itself has this this really like cascading effect to it. And it's this kind of like light bluish green kind of tinge, and it has a you can kind of see through it, so it doesn't have like this very uniform crown. It's just a really, really nice tree.
It's pretty striking. My first glance is like, oh, what? Huh?
Yeah, and you're like, I don't know how I feel about that. Yeah.
The more you look at it, it's like, oh, it has a kind of a unique beauty to it.
It does, yeah. It's got a unique beauty to it, and that, I think, is what kind of sets it apart as a spruce. But we're going to get into a little bit about that in a little bit later. So it is a spruce, of course. So it has quadrangular needles, like needles you can spin in your finger.
Ooh, yeah.
And they're very sharp and pokey. That's an important thing.
Can I share a quick story?
You may.
On Christmas.
Yeah.
I went to my partner's parents' home.
Yes.
They had this 20-foot Christmas tree.
Okay.
And I identified it as a fir because I grabbed its needles and oh, these are very soft. And I said, fir, F, friendly. Like you taught me.
It's so perfect.
And I knew that it wasn't a spruce because spruces are dangerously pokey.
They're very, very pokey,
and
yeah.
And pine is somewhere in the middle, right?
Yeah, it depends on kind of the species. But yeah. But really, to tell a pine, you actually would look at the number of needles would tell you right off the bat.
Oh, is it two, three?
And five.
And five.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Pines come in fascicles.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And those little bundles of different numbers of meals. Yeah, you get it.
All right, go ahead.
Well, there you go. Well, well done. So they are they're triangular in cross section. I think I just said quadrangular. So these are triangular.
Okay.
And they have these really beautiful cones that hang down. And the cones are, they can get almost like 3 or 4 inches long, dang, which is really like weird for a spruce. A lot of spruces will get that long and they'll be perfectly uniform that entire time. Like the Norway spruce, for example, has big long cones, very, very like perfect the whole way down. Like they start, they're very conical and then they end and they look very, very uniform.
Right.
This, they don't look, in my opinion, quite as uniform. They actually kind of, some look a little wiggly where like they don't quite stay at one curve or they don't go perfectly straight. They kind of curve a little bit and a little bit straight and they have some needles that are a bit, or some scales a little bit longer, a little bit bigger than another. So it's just kind of like a little bit of a disheveled looking tree.
We got some crooked cones.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a crooked coner.
I mean, that's sort of on brand for this tree.
Oh my God, isn't it? Yeah, it's just, it's the fascinating thing about this tree is that it just like doesn't do any of the things you expect for another spruce to do. Mm-hmm. And Alex, do you want to know why it doesn't do that?
Why?
Because it turns out
this
tree may be essentially the sister species, maybe the sister lineage to whatever lineage created and begot all the other spruces in the entire world.
So this is I'm going to repeat that back.
Okay.
This is like, this tree is of a sister lineage.
Yeah.
To the prototypical spruce.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's a fine way to put it.
Okay.
So let me give you a quick descriptor. So the way that I would describe it is that this is a basal member of the band the Spruces. Okay.
Oh, they're bassist for those 2 years.
Exactly, but rather they're bassist who kept the band name and then everybody else left and did their own thing.
Oh,
so if you think of like the spruce A and the spruces are actually most closely related to the pines. So at some point, a spruce split off from a pine and then it was spruce A. That was the prototypical spruce.
Okay.
Then that lineage split. One side is the Brewer spruce that tucked its way in and kept living over here in the West Coast from all the way from Colorado to Idaho, Oregon, Nevada, California, and Oregon. Lived all over the place in this area. Just stayed there. That is where the initial, that prototypical spruce started. That's where the band started. Then a bunch of them got creative differences and said, we're leaving. They then went over the Beringian land bridge, which is between what is now Alaska and Russia.
Right.
And the spruces went over to Asia, went all the way down to all the cool mountains, all the greatest clubs. They then went over to the Alps. They hung out and then very likely either went over the land bridge that was at the time going between Europe and northern North America, or went back across the Beringian land bridge at some other point, came back in, recolonized the United States, or what is now the United States and North America, and then went to all the different places that we have. And now there's about 35 species of spruce. All of those other 34 species of spruce came from that initial vagabond, that initial troubadour that left from the first two and went and became all the other spruces in the entire world, came back and was like, oh my God, Brewer spruce, you're still here.
You're huge now.
And Brewer spruce, been there this whole time, kept putting out all the best albums and chilling.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
That's interesting.
Which like helps to explain why it's such an interesting tree. It doesn't hybridize with any other spruce, like not even the ones that are actually around it right now, the Engelmann spruce and the Sitka spruce.
So it's sort of its own, the solo project is really doing well.
It's really doing well. It's fascinating.
Does that mean like, so when you think of like clades?
Yeah.
Is the Brewer spruce like, of its own clade?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you look at it, and there are, if you go to, again, I'm going to keep on telling people this because I think it's a good reminder. Hmm. Go to the notes on our page. Click on the very first one that says Picea breweriana. That goes to a conifers.org sheet about it. And they have a cladogram, which is just saying, here are all the species and how they're connected and what their most common ancestor was. So you have the very far left side, like the oldest spruce. Then it splits. One split goes over and is the branch that connects all the other spruces underneath it. And then if you go the opposite direction, you go all the way down and it goes all the way over to one spruce, which is the Brewer spruce. So
Dang, I like this tree.
It's fascinating, and it only grows in the Klamath Mountains, which is this area that we have in southern Oregon and northern California. We here in Oregon are best, would best know it as the Siskiyou Mountains.
Okay. By the way, Casey was referring to, when we say the show notes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
In case you're a new listener, you've never done this before, if you go to our website, arbitrarypod, that's ArbitraryPod .com. You can see all of our episodes there with a little picture. Click on one that you're interested in, and you have basically all the resources that Casey used to research for that episode.
Yes, yeah. Not necessarily all. Yeah, I put the big ones that really hit all the good stuff.
Yeah.
But usually it's maybe 3-4. I think the most I've ever had is like 6 or something.
Sure.
But
it's under a header that says additional readings.
Yeah, a lot of things are kind of redundant, so I just read several things to say the same thing.
Sure.
I put the best one. Other times, I just like, yeah, I'm going to do this, and you know what? The rest of it came from a brain. But that's not necessarily the case this time. Actually, a lot of this comes from reading that, reading about it there, also talking with Michael, and also reading Michael's book, his newest one, which is the Klamath Mountains and Natural History. There's an entire like inset that just says the Brewer Spruce, why it's so cool.
Hell yeah.
And so before we go too far, I want to introduce our lovely guest, which is Michael Kaufman. And first, we need to get a little bit of his credentials as to why he's qualified to talk about conifers.
All right.
I see the world through the eyes of conifers is one way I like to say it. I mean, they're just so fascinating in case you know this stuff. But, you know, they're 350 million year old lineage. They've adapted to the world over deep time. I grew up in Virginia in the Appalachian and the Piedmont and the Appalachian Mountains. And there's some conifers there. But when I moved to California, my mind was blown. I mean, it was almost like every mountaintop had some different species, and the biogeography across California and even up into the Cascades and across the Rocky Mountains and Nevada, you know, what a Great Basin. You can really see the story of plant biogeography through these conifers. And there's not that many of them, right? So if we think about conifers in a worldly sense, there's something like 660 species. And we compare that to flowering plants, which are, whatever it is. It increases every day, right?
I was going to say,
plants are described.
Last I remember, like 250,000 or something like that, right off the top of my head.
Yeah, yeah. Probably 300,000, if not 400,000 that haven't been described yet. But the story is wild, right? So the asteroid hit 66 million years ago, and that shifted the phytogeography of plant life on Earth, right? So conifers went into decline, flowering plants arose, but yet the conifers still cover about 30% of the forested land on Earth, even though there's not as many species. So they still do really well in certain areas, and those areas are often, say, north of the 45th parallel, on mountaintops south of that area, on poor soils. And then you have the temperate rainforest, Pacific Northwest temperate rainforest, which is just this, you know, conifer wonderland right along the coast.
So let me get this straight. Conifers.
Yeah.
There aren't that many species.
Yes.
But they cover a huge amount of land.
Yeah.
As compared to flowering plants.
Exactly. If you do like the proportion of one to the other and you try to lay them out proportionally over land, then conifers should have like almost no space. They should be like one conifer in the entire state of Oregon. Everything else is broadleaf trees. That kind of ratio,
right?
You know? So that is so that's why they're like so fascinating, and why our area, and notably the Klamath Mountains, is such a unique spot, because the Klamath Mountains have something like 32 species of conifer native to just that one little mountain range.
Out of how many species total?
About 600. He said 660. I've heard commonly 630.
Okay.
But that number is always like getting revised because someone lumps and someone splits, that kind of thing.
That's a huge amount of conifer diversity for one little space.
It is. And then if you include, this is kind of what we're talking about a little bit today. What we're talking about today is endemism. Thank you, Alex.
I'm so sorry to hear you have an endemism.
I'd have it's really hard. Essentially what that means, Alex, is a plant or an animal that lives only in one small specific area,
right?
And it's endemic to that ecosystem or that specific spot. And we are kind of discussing what that means, because in the Calamus, it's just a place that's chock full of animals and plants that are endemic to it and nowhere else on the planet.
Interesting. So this carries over into other plants. It's not just this brewer spruce.
Exactly. It is just one of several. The only place in the United States that can hold a candle to the Klamath Mountains in terms of the biodiversity as well as the amount of endemic species that are native there is actually the Southern Appalachian Mountains, like North Carolina down.
Okay.
Another place that has a whole lot of these characteristics. So if you like have a map of the United States and you like color code it, like what is it, a heat map of like where the biggest biodiversity is?
Right.
It's the Klamath and the Siskiyou Mountains of Southern Oregon, Northern California, and Southern Appalachia.
Got it.
So we asked Michael to explain a little bit about what makes the Klamath Mountains so unique. Obviously, he just wrote a natural history book and edited a natural history book. There was, I think, 32 authors.
He's the guy to talk to about this.
Exactly. He's the guy to talk to. So basically, we wanted to know why he wanted to write a natural history about this place.
Nobody had ever done one for the Klamath Mountains. And through my work writing Conifer Country, I just wanted to know more. I wanted to know everything. The diversity of life in the Klamath Mountains is unparalleled. And this occurs for a variety of reasons. One is its proximity to the coast in the Pacific, which keeps it cool and moist, particularly on the west side of the range. But the Klamath Mountains are defined by geology, and it's an ancient geology. The Klamath Mountain geomorphic province is something that has formed over about 150 million years. Some of the rock that makes up that mountain range was formed even earlier in ophiolitic sequences under the ocean. And ophiolites are this strange sort of volcanism that occurs deep down, and then it gets accreted onto the continent, and then it's inhospitable to a lot of plant life, but the plants that can live on it are often endemic. They grow nowhere else on Earth. So there's this fascinating level of biodiversity created by these unique soils, this unique climate, but also the proximity the Klamath Mountains have to other mountain ranges. So there's an influence from the north, the Pacific Northwest. We're really at the southern extent of the Pacific Northwest here, based on, I like to think, the southern range extension of certain conifers like Western Red Cedar, Sitka Spruce, Western Hemlock. But we also have an influence from the Great Basin, Oregon and Nevada. Plants come in on the east side of the Klamath Mountains. And then we have the influence of the California Floristic Province at the northern range extension. So it's this real crossroads. And plants are just one way to see this diversity. The other amazing critters that live here, we have about 70 different taxa of snails, which is fascinating. Nobody had really written about that before, so a lot of research went into that. And then, I mean, the real amazing story that flies under the radar is our amphibian diversity. We have endemics. I think it's 5 or 6 endemic salamanders. I should know that. But amazing diversity of life. And it's all sculpted by this unique positioning of the Klamath Mountains in Western North America, like I mentioned. And because of that, we have what I like to say is one of the most, probably the most diverse temperate coniferous forest on the planet.
Oh my God. Isn't he just like a delight?
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and so he worked with like 32 other authors to come together with over like 10 years of research to do this like exhaustive work. It's so amazing. And the Klamath Mountains, like every time I hear more about them, I'm just like blown away.
It is like yeah, I guess this is one of those, it sounds like one of those things that you just get really interested in.
Yeah.
Like this very specific thing. And then you like become obsessed with it.
Yeah.
You would have to be. I don't know.
Oh, most definitely.
I guess like that's my perspective because I've never been like completely obsessed with like a natural science, I guess.
Yeah, totally.
In the same way that Michael and his coworkers are or that you are, you know?
Sometimes, yeah. I guess you just get wildly, you know, focused on something.
Yeah.
Well, this is at least a good place to get wildly focused on because there's so much to like keep your focus kind of sharp. You know, all the different snails, all the different amphibians, all the different trees, all the different plants, you know, and the fact that these mountains have been there for so long doing their thing makes it so that they are like constantly creating new things and new niches for things to live in. And creating those new niches or having those niches kind of be existing there is what helps create these, you know, endemic species.
It's almost like a little tropical pocket there.
Yeah, kind of like that, where it's just like wildly, weirdly, like crazily... oh my God.
Eventful?
No, what... oh, Jesus Christ. diverse.
Yes.
Diverse.
That was the word.
That's the word. I couldn't think of, which is why I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, and it's just like fast-paced evolution, living in the fast lane of evolution.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And cool. You gotta love it. Like it just makes it so like wild of a place.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just recap. So they are situated, the Klamaths, mm-hmm. in this weird climate moderating space between these giant mountains that have come up on all sides, many of them after the Klamaths were already there. The Klamaths were there, and then the Cascades erupted on top of them.
Okay.
In some places, they're on this zone that was not covered by the glaciers that came down in the Pleistocene. They are high enough that they were refuges for plants that were living above if some glaciers did happen, because there are places that certainly glaciated in that area, but they were mountains that were high enough that they were kind of above the glaciers or were low enough that they created these nice refuges that were still warm. They have these influences from the east and the north and the south that are like vastly different plant, he calls them floristic provinces, that all come together. So you get this this diversity that pops together. Then you also add in these crazy, crazy things, the ophiolites, and this specific kind of soil called serpentine soils. And let's hear what he has to say about that.
Serpentine, this is that ophiolitic stuff that I was mentioning. It's a complex story, but basically these serpentine rocks, and we have the largest outcrops of serpentine rocks in North America here, between Northern California and Southern Oregon. But they are high in heavy metals like nickel and magnesium, so that they've often been pursued as spots to extract. But, you know, if you're isolated enough, the Klamath Mountains are really steep and often inaccessible, so a lot of these places have remained untouched, thankfully.
Yeah.
And due to this depauperate soil, the plants that grow there are almost always conifers with a manzanita understory. There's a few flowering... we have an endemic oak, the Sadler's oak, that enjoys some serpentine every once in a while, and huckleberry oak, Quercus vaccinifolium. But basically, this is a conifer wonderland, and things like incense cedar, love serpentine, Port Orford cedar, which is a near Klamath Mountain endemic, love the serpentine.
Mm-hmm.
And it there's a variety of reasons. The lack of competition that I mentioned earlier is a big one. And conifers just do a really good job of dealing with poor sites. You know, they have these mycorrhizal relationships with fungi that help them with nutrient absorption. So the serpentines really define a lot of the Klamath Mountains. And where you were on Mount Eddy, that's in the eastern side of the range. Those are some of the most ancient serpentines, upwards of 300 million years ago that rock was formed. And I mentioned the Klamath Mountains are about 150 million years. That's because this rock was then, like I mentioned, thrown kind of on top of the continent.
Yeah.
And then there's also this influence of these island arcs that form, these volcanic islands.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever been... to the Blue Mountains of Northern Oregon. There's a connection there with the Klamath Mountains in the formation of that similar rock type. So it's kind of this mixed mash of all sorts of things that have been formed at different times and now thrown together. And that's often why it's called the Klamath Knot.
The Klamath Knot.
The Klamath Knot.
That was good. Borat would be very proud.
Oh, yeah. Borat 2 would be even prouder.
Dude, Borat 2, great movie. I actually really liked it.
Is it really?
You should watch it, yeah.
Yeah, I'll get around to it.
He does the woman that's in it. Mm-hmm. I think it's his daughter?
Yeah.
She crushes it.
Really?
It's so good. I think we've actually talked about this on the show one
Have
time.
Have we?
I think maybe.
That's no surprise.
Either way, everyone go watch Borat 2. It aged... Borat 1, maybe that didn't age very well, but the response is not just like an Anger Man 2 where they just try to do the same thing again.
Right, right.
It's evolved.
It's like a self-aware evolution of the Borat thing.
Really good. Like, I really like it.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
Casey, a conifer wonderland.
Isn't it beautiful? Why do you think I live here?
I love it.
So that is...
No, it's not... not the Klamath Mountains.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Here. Around.
Oh, you're saying that wonderland extends up to the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
All right.
Pacific Wonderland.
I'll give you that. Is that what annoying people call the Pacific Northwest?
No, it's on a license plate in Oregon.
Pacific Wonderland?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's one of
my... That is annoying.
Oh, God. He's like, yeah, I hate it. Oh, geez,
conifer
Alex.
Conifer Wonderland.
It is. It's a conifer wonderland. But... now you kind of get the idea why you'd find an endemic plant like the brewer spruce.
Yeah.
Because while everywhere else around it changed, either some conifers outcompeted it or other conifers or other plants basically outcompeted it as well. It was like, well, this is like a really good site and I just can't quite compete with the Douglas fir, so I'm not going to grow there. So you find it growing in these sites that are a little bit more specific in terms of the needs and the skills that you have to grow there. The brewer spruce has had those apparently for millions and millions of years.
You know what the Klamath Mountains are?
What?
It's a aisle of misfit toys.
Oh, dude.
Just don't fit in anywhere else. There's a place for you in the Klamath Mountains.
Come on down to the Klamath Misfit Toy Mountain. That's a perfect description, I think. Well, and that's what kind of makes this brewer spruce really interesting. But the other thing that makes it interesting is that it's an endemic. But the question is, like, how did it become endemic? Because there's a couple different ways.
Sure. So there's a couple types of endemic plants or a couple types of endemism. There's paleo endemics, and paleo means ancient, right? So a great example, and I'll stick to the conifers here, but we can talk about some flowering plants after. But a great example is the brewer spruce.
Okay.
And the brewer spruce used to have a range much broader across Western North America. There's fossil evidence from Nevada and Idaho. And what has happened over time is as climates have shifted, climate that we still have in the Klamath Mountains today mimics this more ancient climate of moist, these pockets where it's also dry, right? But we have this influence of the California floristic province and drying out in the summer. We don't get rain here for a couple of months. Well, much rain. We occasionally get thunderstorms, but we don't get like the storms that we get in the winter don't happen in the summer.
Yeah.
And so the brewer spruce has more or less retracted its range into the Klamath Mountains only.
I see.
And that's an ancient endemic, right? So it's a plant that grows nowhere else on Earth. It used to grow much more broadly, and now we call it a Klamath Mountain endemic. Now, yeah. And there's also neo-endemics, and these are, neo means newer, right? So on these serpentine landscapes in particular, it's a great example. We have species that are arising more recently in time. So maybe it's over the last 10,000 years since the end of the Pleistocene when the climate shifted again. And through isolation on, say, a specific outcrop of serpentine like Mount Eddy. Mount Eddy's a great example of this. You have these foxtail pines. There's also a polymodium that grows up there, the Mount Eddy Sky Pilot, a beautiful mountain, high mountain flower. It's the only place on Earth that flower grows, and it's been isolated there. There's another population of polymonium on Mount Shasta, but they're not swapping genes anymore, right? So this, it's an endemic to the Klamath and specifically Mount Eddy. So that's the story of the endemism, and a brief story anyway.
How can he say it so easily? So frustrating. Anyway, so you have these two main kinds of endemic plants, of endemism. And I always thought that's such a fascinating idea, you know? So one is like, essentially, which came first, the plant or the thing that the plant's growing on, kind
right,
of thing.
Right.
So in this case, the plant has always been here, and then it just has retracted its range to be only in this one spot, as opposed to other plants coming in, adapting to that spot, and now they are growing there and only there because they've done that adaptation.
And that's paleo and neo, respectively.
Correct, okay. Yeah. So our brewer spruce is a paleo endemic species because it's obviously so old. All of the spruces of all the world started here in North America, and this is the one that just hasn't changed the whole time.
So cool.
It's growing down there. It's weeping all over the place, and it's just being... It's just being itself. It's just like this sad indie musician from, you know, 4 million years ago that you're just like, wow.
They're still making music.
It's amazing. Wow.
It's an incredible tree. I mean, what a story. I think it's always, I love a living fossil too.
Yeah, right?
Like that's always so fascinating to me that this same, we have this plant in two forms, living in front of us.
Yeah.
And from millions of years ago.
Yeah, right.
In rock form.
In rock form. In like indie rock form.
Very good,
exactly.
Casey.
Exactly.
Well, Casey, big thank you to Michael Kaufman for chatting with us. Hey, if you want to hear that whole discussion, you can head to our Patreon and join at the $5 a month level. That's called the Arboretum. And you unlock, got a treasure trove of past and present bonus episodes. The entire conversation with Michael is on there. And we thank Michael for his time and
so much.
And thanks, Casey, for chatting with him. And we thank you for listening to this conversation. Hey, we'll be right back with our review of the Brewer Spruce.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the Brewer Spruce with Michael Kaufman, just a steel trap mind of a man.
God. Yeah.
It's time for our review of the Brewer Spruce. Casey, here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on the Brewer Spruce. Should we also give a little sub-review to the Klamath Mountains? I think that would be right.
Ooh, okay, yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
Okay, and then give these things a rating from 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey, as our resident endemistic man.
Ooh.
It's like Encino,
right.
Man.
Yeah, I'm only right here.
That's right.
Nowhere else.
We begin with you.
Okay, so I, funny enough, have never... I'm trying to think the first time I saw a Brewer Spruce, and I can't remember. I think that I was driving around through the Siskiyous and randomly saw one. I was so stoked. I collected the cones, and they were just the worst cones ever. Like, they were old, and they were falling apart, and they were very brittle, but I was like, I got them. This is good. I'm going to count.
Yeah.
Then I went down last summer and I was like, I know they're out here in this one spot. I'm going to go find them. I'm going to go like get a good cone.
To the Klamath Mountains, you mean?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I went down to the Eastern Klamath Mountains. It was the Russian Wilderness.
Yeah.
And such a beautiful, wonderful place. Like totally worth getting there. That's where the Miracle Mile is that I think we've talked about.
Right, yeah.
Which Michael also has talked about, where you can find 18 conifers in a square mile.
Crazy.
It's wild. Like it's just such a crazy amount of diversity.
And you collected all of them.
All, yes, except for one. I couldn't find the Western juniper that's growing in that area. And that's very sad. It's okay. I'm going to go back and find it.
Yeah.
But holy hell, it is. It's just a fantastical place.
Mm.
And I saw the tree and I was like, there it is. And it's just like this weeping thing. I found one growing like kind of off this precipice. So you could like see the whole view of it. And
wow,
I was just taken by it. And I think I'm more taken by the tree, not because it's a gorgeous tree. Interestingly, Alex, I actually don't find weeping trees to be that spectacular.
Sure.
A lot of people really like the cascading effect of it, you know?
It's an acquired taste.
It is. And there are some that I do really like. The weeping beech tree, for example. I think the big ones are just fantastic looking trees.
I think it's just a little bit tacky.
Yes, exactly. I think so. And so initially, my thought, if I just saw it growing, I'm like, eh, a little much.
Sure.
Whereas when you see it growing out in the woods, it's not the fact that it's doing its thing. It doesn't really matter. It's that, oh my God, there's that tree. It's like you see this thing that like is so rare. Like, oh my God, there he is. He's right there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, should I go say hi? What can I do? Can I have a cone? Hi, can I have a cone? Like,
and then he would do that like Turkish ice cream man thing with you.
What? No idea what that is. We might have to get into that later.
I'll show you.
Well, it's so it's just one of those trees that when you see it, you're like, oh my God, there it is. That tree that you can't find anywhere else. It just grows right here. It's got that weird cone. And then you go back and you learn that it's an ancient tree. So for me, I think I'm going to give the Brewer's Spruce, I think I'm going to give it an 8.3.
Damn.
I'm going to give it an 8.3 because like one of the big things that like that sticks in my mind of why I think this has to be considered a cool tree is that it's only growing in the Klamaths and it has been growing and doing the same thing for so long that every single other spruce tree in the entire world is younger than it, is not even on its level.
Yeah.
And has come back in and refound it. And it's been like, I've been here the whole time, baby.
Yeah.
I don't care. So I just think that's like OG badass about this tree. I like the cones. I think they're great. I like that the tree can get big and still have its rough and rowdy, droopy appearance, like a gigantic monster with like such old matted fur that's like hanging down. Like it just kind of has this like kind of like this appearance of like, okay, you're cooler than me.
Like
I don't know why.
Hippie mountain hermit kind of vibe.
Yeah, exactly. So like, yeah, I have like respect for it. It's not that I would necessarily want to plant it in my yard and like have this beautiful specimen tree.
Yeah.
It's not at that level. It's not beautiful.
Well, it doesn't want to be there.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. It's like, hey, have you ever heard of an electric guitar? And then it just vomits on you, you know? So that's what I think. 8.3 for this super cool, unique tree.
Okay, a great score.
Now, Alex, what do you think? Because a lot of this tree has aesthetics that I think you would have an opinion on.
Yeah, I'm with you on the weepingness. I'm not a big fan of weeping trees. I guess like weeping willows are kind of cool. But
that might be the one exception.
Maybe,
yeah.
But even then, I'm like, yeah. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't take my breath away. It immediately reminds me of like, I guess like 18th century paintings and Pocahontas the 90s essentially.
Really? Okay.
Back
in the 1890s.
You got it.
I guess no, 18th century is the 1790s.
The 1790s.
Yeah, well, sorry.
Yeah. I always wonder, I always mix that up.
Yeah.
I have to be like very intentionally delete. Subtract one
me
from
too.
The thing.
Yeah. Whenever I'm reading something, I'm always like, okay, they're talking about the 1790s.
Yes. I think its endemism is very cool.
Well done.
I think that it's got a great like vibe. I have no emotional connection to it, unfortunately. Like you or Michael might, but that's fine. My cones are my own. Your cones are your own. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a 7.2.
Whoa, that's way higher than I thought.
Really?
Yeah.
I still think it's a great tree, and it's okay. I like the whole kind of canon around it.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But 7.2, yeah, it's been a while since I've given a sub. Well, I guess last week I gave like a 2.
Yeah, yeah.
But before that, I usually don't go too far below 6 or so.
Yeah, that's very fair. Yeah, you had your Michelin star rating scheme for a while.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to that.
Yeah, it was hard to conceptualize, I think. Like, I think everyone got it, but they're like, we don't know how you're actually formulating this.
It wasn't all that sustainable.
Yeah.
Well, that was our... Yes, what did I say, 6.2?
You said 7. 7.2.
I said 8.3.
Yeah. So okay. It's a tree that's like, go plant that tree. Don't choose any other spruce. Plant that one.
Yeah.
That's what I think we're getting at.
I think so. I like other spruces too, though.
Yeah.
I think spruces in general are a little tacky in 90s.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like a blue Save spruce is very 90s.
Oh, yeah. I think that's true. I see that. In fact, I see it as like a 70s going to 80s.
Yeah, sure.
And I feel like 70s going to 80s was like a hard transition for us to make. And that's because I think that entire transitory fashion period, rough.
Yeah.
Real rough.
Any decade shift is like, whoa, what are we going to do now?
Yeah, exactly.
That was our review of the Brewer Spruce. It's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week's question is from Alexis on the Patreon. Alexis writes, hi, Casey and Alex. Hi, Alexis.
Hello.
I need to know, what's the deal with willows? Hey, speaking of willows.
Oh, yeah.
And why haven't they conquered all the forests yet? They're so fast growing. They root super easily. And I've even seen a few willows that have fallen down and sprouted 5 or 6 upright mini trees from the wreckage. They're so vigorous. How does anything manage to outcompete them? Thanks for your question, Alexis. Good question, Casey.
That's a great question. I like that question quite a bit.
This makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Willows are kind of an absurd little class of tree.
They really are, yeah.
The term new roots, new shoots originated from our black willow episode.
That is so correct.
They are the king of restarting and refreshing.
Yeah, that's really true. So this is a fun question because it's fun to think about a tree like doing everything and you're like, why are you not the champion? Like you've done it all. What are you missing?
I think I know.
Ah, do you want to go?
May I?
Please.
Just to see.
Let's see what you got.
Well, environment.
It is the environment. What do you mean?
Well, they only grow in they grow in riparian areas.
Yes.
And wait, they also grow outside of riparian areas, don't they?
Not a whole lot. They really prefer to be like almost with their feet in the water.
They grow in riparian areas. If you take one and plant it in a non-riparian area, riparian meaning on the border of the water and the land.
Yes, exactly.
It won't know what to do with itself and it'll not grow.
And it'll just implode.
So it commands its little zone, but... if you put it in a different place, it's like it's like taking the star quarterback of your high school team and putting him on, you know, the Patriots.
Yeah. Honestly,
and
that's,
suddenly he gets crushed because he's used to dominating his field, but you know the competition's different.
Yeah, I think that is a fair descriptor.
You don't like it?
I do. Well, there's a couple more bits to it.
Okay,
but I think what you have noted is a very very important section of this. So I do like it very much. Don't take that away from you. All right.
Don't take that away from you.
So I think you're right in that they basically said, I'm going to grow next to water and I am going to suck that water so fast that I'm going to be able to never slow down.
Yeah, boy.
And they get to take everything. They just get to go as fast as they can. So they grow out there. They are able to respond to changes in the water really quickly, which is why they can sprout. Whenever they fall down, they resprout again because half the time the water they're next to is rushing and it floods and it breaks them down. So they have to have that response or else they just get literally wiped off of their planet.
Yeah.
So they have made all of their adaptations exactly perfect for their spot. So you're right. If you take them out and you give them a bit of a hard time with less cushy soils, or rather maybe more cushy soils, but less water in the soil, then they're like, whoa, I can't grow quite as fast because I'm not getting all the water that I normally would use. So water is the thing that plants kind of run through really quickly because they suck it in and then they put it out in photosynthesis and they use it to do, you know, a bunch of other stuff. It's just a big part of their process, just like you and I drink water all the time. So as soon as there is a change in that, they are not competing quite as well. And that is the other side of this equation, where the willow has a budget, just like every tree has a budget of energy. And some trees put all of their energy to reproduction. Some trees put it all towards growing really fast and just getting up and out competing. And other trees put it towards, say, longevity, where they would say, we're going to put this on defense. So if you are a willow, you've taken all of your energy budget and you've put it towards fast growth and reproduction. And you've left very little for your protection.
I see.
Other trees maybe grow a little bit slower, but they can do it in a little bit less good conditions. They can do it with maybe shade, a bit of shade above them. And on top of that, they've taken their excess and they've put it towards defense. So if something attacks them, they can withstand that and continue growing.
You have things like the giant sequoia, who take their budget and invest it long term.
Yeah.
And just like play the long game.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, okay. And the long game usually has more defense and strength in their wood. The irony about this is that the redwoods and the sequoias actually also grow really fast. So they're kind of the exception to this kind of rule. Where they this is why they were ranked so highly by me, is that they've maxed out their budget on all levels. So they're like they're like Apple Corp or something like that. They're just the biggest company around and they have the resources to put 100% to everything.
Yeah.
So the willows, the reason they don't compete so well is, first off, because you're changing their environment and they have built their budget based on their environment. So if you change their environment but not their budget, then all of a sudden they're not competing quite as well. Just like what you're saying, this guy, his football team, they're not very fast, they're not very strong, so you can just be just the right amount of toughness. But when you put them next to the Patriots or some other football team that is really, really tough, then you're just going to get bashed around.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what happens with willows. Now, some willows do compete, and they actually have messed with their budget, so they do grow taller, go do something else. But for the most part, they're very decay, or they're very susceptible to decay. So if you do get some wound in them, they'll start to decay really quickly. They won't, like, withstand and keep the fungus out and say, no, I'm going to compartmentalize this and going to keep growing, like what an oak often would do, or an Osage orange, or some other plant that has like this wild amount of decay resistance in their wood. Bald cypress, another great example. So all those trees have budgeted towards defense. The willow has not. So the willow gets blasted out.
It is interesting to me that a tree that grows basically in the water would not be all that decay resistant.
Right?
It's water.
Who cares? Right? So actually with the bald cypress, it's the same thing. Right, the bald cypress grows in the same kinds of swamps, but it grows up and is a little bit slower and is very decay resistant wood. Of course, this is coming from, you know, it's a conifer, not a broadleaf tree. So there's like all these other like fundamental differences. But if we just take it at face value for what it is, the willow, instead of doing the decay resistance, they just shoot out really fast and then do all that. And then when they do decay, their response, instead of just dying, is saying, okay, I'm just going to regrow again from this other spot that's not decayed.
Yeah.
So they never die. They just are like a hydra. So yeah, I guess they're just like, well, okay, what if we do die and we just start over? Can we just do that? And they're like, yeah, this is working for us. Let's just do that.
Right.
And of course, nature and evolution is not something that's working towards some perfection. It just responds to whatever works at the time. So it could be that the willow just has always done the same thing because it's just never not died out completely.
Yeah.
So this is just what's working for the willow over the, you know, millions and millions of years.
Interesting.
So there you go. It's a very good question.
Yes, very thought-provoking. Thank you, Alexis.
Yes.
If you have a question for us, join the Patreon at the $3 a month tier. That's Quercus and Alder, Q&A.
That's right.
Submit it there. And if you don't get your question read on the mainline episodes, we do intermittent patron-exclusive Q&A episodes where you most definitely will get your question read
every
and answered.
Question.
That's right. In a marathon session, usually.
Yeah, usually, yeah.
I think
yeah.
our last record was 2 hours?
I think it was. It was something long. But then again, we hadn't actually gone back in and answered those questions in a long time, so we gave it a long time for people to ask questions.
Let it build up a little bit, yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Or you can join the Arboretum for 2 bonus episodes a month. That's $5. Or at $10, the Cone of the Month Club.
Yep.
Every month, you get a unique die-cut cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist. You can see all those on our Instagram when we announce them. This month is, well, the one that our patrons will be getting this month is the U, the American U, or the
yes,
Canada U.
Exactly.
Illustrated by our friend Leanne Flug.
That's right. You can also get access to all of the last 2 years worth of cones
yeah.
with secret hidden access to our secret hidden cone store.
It's very groovy, baby.
Yes.
It's very groovy, baby. Yes. above that is Arbitrary Plus, our live stream tier. You get 2 live streams with Casey and I a month, and one with Casey and I should clarify, one with Casey and I, one with just me playing a tree-themed video game. Those are really fun.
It's a lot of fun to do.
We're a tight little community of people, and it's we hope to see it grow and see more of you in there.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Above that, generous admission, our premier top tier. That's the definition of top tier, Casey.
Oh, it sure is. Yeah, you can only get this at like the premium gas station pump.
That's right.
76.
This is diesel Patreon we're talking about. You can give us $20 a month or whatever you choose to really support the show. But any tier supports the show. Even listening to the show and not joining the Patreon supports the show. So we're just grateful to have you here. Casey Clapp.
That's right. Alex Croson. Break a leg tonight.
Thank you, my friend. Hey, I'll dedicate one to you.
Whoa, thank you. Wow. Yeah. I'm going to maybe think about getting chicken and then rethink it.
Yeah. I also want to listen to this conversation you have with the bartender and see how that goes.
Casey, how many drinks have you had? Yeah, shut up, Alex. Where's this bartender at?
You become a Bostonian when you drink?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Makes sense. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
See you guys. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.